I'm Jody, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jody.
And I thought you guys were going to dress up, so that's why I'm wearing my wings. No, I'm just kidding. But I thought it might help me feel better, a little less nervous. So my sobriety date is May 1st, 2004. My home group is the Any Lengths group. We meet in Culpeper on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m., which is why it's called the Any Lengths group. But it's a big book study, and it's a really great meeting. So if you're ever in Culpeper at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, please come join us. It's worth it, trust me. And so, you know, I just don't know where to start. So I'll start at the beginning. You know, my family growing up, my parents divorced when I was pretty young, and so my mom was a single parent, and she worked a lot, and if she wasn't working, she was going to school to get some degree, or, you know, working at night, and it was just really crazy. And my sister is an alcoholic, and my father's an alcoholic as well, and I remember spending the weekends with my dad, and I would cry and beg my mom not to make me go spend the weekend with my dad. And looking back, I remember him, like, just standing in the room and watching me break down and cry and beg my mom not to make me go with him. And I can't imagine how that made him feel, you know. It got a little easier as time went on, but, I mean, there would be times where I would spend a couple of weeks with him in the summertime, and my mom lived in Virginia, and he lived in Virginia, my mom lived in Indiana, and I called my mom about a week into it or 5 days into it and said, I can't take it anymore, I need you to come pick me up. So she drove all the way from Indiana to Virginia to pick me up, you know, and I didn't feel comfortable around him. I didn't feel, you know, safe or anything like that. I don't know why that was, but, you know, now it's a little bit different. You know, once I got older and, I guess old enough to drink, but not really old enough to drink, not legal enough, we became kind of drinking buddies. But, so my father's an alcoholic, my sister's an alcoholic, and, my sister, is 9 years older than me, and she spent a lot of time when I was younger in and out of jail and rehab, and I remember seeing the way that her alcoholism affected my family and thinking, I'm not going to be like her. I'm never going to be like her. I don't want to drink like her. I don't understand why she can't stop drinking. I mean, it's just a liquid. Why can't she just put it down? And you know, we were in family therapy. You know, my mom would take me to Al-Anon, to Alateen, all that kind of stuff to try and figure this stuff out, you know. And nothing, you know, nothing ever really helped. But my sister, you know, she had been in and out of AA for 20-plus years, and she couldn't get it. I mean, she just couldn't get it. And I remember being, you know, still drinking, me drinking and taking her to detoxes and dropping her off or taking her to the hospital in the middle of the night, trying to get them to accept her as a patient. And, you know, she'll call me at like 5, 6 a.m. and say, you know, they're releasing me. Well, not really. They're not releasing her, but they're releasing me. I need you to come pick me up in D.C., you know, and so I drive in the middle of the night to go pick her up. And, I mean, it was just crazy. And just, you know, all the while I was drinking and doing drugs and thinking that I'm not going to be like her. You know, obviously I have control of this thing, you know. You know, and this was like in high school, so I remember going to keg parties and, you know, all the normal high school parties and thinking, you know, I've got control of this thing. I'm not throwing up. I'm not getting fights with my boyfriend. I'm not, you know, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. I'm not, you know, this is why I'm not an alcoholic, and obviously I'm not an alcoholic. And, you know, got to a certain point where I couldn't control it anymore. I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't control the way I behaved anymore, you know. And you know, all the while, I think it was about 15 or 16, I went to my first AA meeting with my sister to support her, and it was a young people's meeting in Northern Virginia, and it was a huge meeting, a ton of young people, and just sitting in the room and really just soaking it in and thinking, like, there's just no way that all these people are sober. You know, all these young people, I mean, there were, like, teenagers in there, you know. There were people my age in there sober, and I just couldn't believe it. And listening to what people were saying in that meeting and relating and identifying with them. And I really, you know, the thought in my head was, well, it's obviously because my sister's an alcoholic that I can relate with these alcoholics, you know. I mean, just the lies that I told myself to make it okay to continue to drink. And, you know, I would leave those AA meetings that I would go to support my sister, and I would get drunk. And that made perfect sense to me, you know, because I'm not an alcoholic. It doesn't matter what I do, you know. I'm not an alcoholic. It's just a phase I'm going through. I'm, you know, 15, 16 years old. That's what we do. And it changed. I mean, it really changed. It got to a certain point where every time I drank, I would throw up. Every time I drank, I would do something that hurt somebody I cared about. You know, whether it was to get angry and to yell at them, or a lot of times I was famous for just disappearing. You know, we would be hanging out at somebody's house, and I would say, I'm going to go pick up a cheeseburger. 3 hours later, they would call me and be like, where are you? I'm at home in bed. Where are you? You know, and I just had no idea how my behavior affected other people. And I didn't really care, you know, and just recently a couple of memories came back into my mind, just really disrespectful stuff that I did to my friends, to their families, to their mothers. The way that I treated their property, the way that I treated them, was a lot like the way I treated my own mother, you know, with complete disregard and disrespect and just, you know, no care, no worries, you know. I'm doing what I'm doing, and it'll all be fine. And, you know, I hated school all throughout high school. I hated school. And I would make up any excuse not to go. I would beg my mom to call me out of school. Sometimes I would skip. Sometimes I would leave school early. I just hated it. I did not want to be in school. I would much rather be sleeping in or, you know, getting drunk, getting high, or hanging out with the, you know, big kids or whatever, anything but going to school. And I hated it, and I don't know, I really don't know how I graduated high school, but I managed to graduate, and when I graduated high school, I mean, everything was on, you know. It was, I was free, you know. I was working almost part-time, or almost full-time, rather, and I was going to school. I was going to a community college down the street, and my work allowed me to make my own schedule. So if I didn't feel like coming in, if I was hungover, I could come in at 11 and then work until, you know, 6 or 7 and be fine. You know, that was fine with them. And they would laugh at me when I would come in, like, obviously hungover, you know, and spend my lunch breaks in the bathroom vomiting, you know, or come in all glassy-eyed and red-eyed. And I mean, I worked at a doctor's office, and I remember at one point making an appointment with the doctor because my eyes were so red, the Visine hadn't worked yet. And so I made this appointment with them, you know, freaking out, pretending to freak out because, you know, something was wrong with my eyes, something's wrong with my eyes, and I was stoned, you know, just trying to get the heat off of my back, you know. And I would go on lunch breaks, and I would get stoned, or I would get drunk, and I would come back, and I mean, I don't know what they were thinking, you know? I really don't. And, I mean, it was just, it's funny, but, you know, around that time, I started feeling like something was wrong, you know, something's different, something, obviously my drinking has changed, you know. I'm now drinking every day. I count down the hours until I get off of work so I can drink again. I'm getting that feeling in the pit of my stomach where it's like, anxious, anxiety, you know, like a ball in the pit of your stomach, and I know that once I get off of work and I get a drink in me, if I, even a beer or just a shot, I'm going to be good, you know. And as soon as that, I take that, I mean, that, the ball in my stomach just disappears, you know, and I feel the fire going down, and I feel alive, and I feel okay, and you know, that went on for a year, and you know, I started thinking, you know, maybe it's my boyfriend, maybe it's my friends, maybe it's, you know, this job, maybe if I just get away and focus on school, everything will be okay. And so I moved down to Virginia Beach. That's where my mom had moved to, and I knew no one. And so instead of, I mean, at this point I was 20 years old, almost 21, and so I wasn't yet legal to drink in bars or anything like that. So I would drink at home alone, which was a great idea because I didn't have to explain my drinking. I didn't have to hide anything. I didn't have to share with anybody, you know. And, I mean, it was perfect. And, you know, I got crazy. I got crazy really quickly. And, you know, I didn't have a job. I didn't have any money. So I was using, like, my school money, my loan money or grant money to pay for, you know, booze or whatever. And it got to a point where all of that money was gone, and I would beg my mom to buy me alcohol. And at one point, like, I had just a little bit, like, $25 or $40 left over on the student loan. And so I went and got this huge bottle of, I think it was rum. And it was, like, I don't know, gallons and gallons of rum. And it was, like, you know, there was no label on it or whatever. It's just, you know, generic rum. And so I got that, and I got, you know, a little 2-liter of Coke, and I brought it back to the house. And I started drinking at, like, 4:30. And I remember my mom coming home and coming in the door and looking at me like, who are you? What have you done with my daughter? What's going on? Why are you doing this? You know? And I just kept drinking, you know? And, I mean, at that point, you know, my sister, she had been sober for about a year and a half, and I mean, I would go back to Northern Virginia to visit my boyfriend, and that's where she lived, so I would go to meetings with her while I was up there. And I remember her taking me to the Eastern Area Young People's Conference of NA, of people in AA, young people in AA, and it was in Baltimore one year, and it was just a huge conference, lots of young people. And I just remember being so scared, you know, and I think at that point I had managed to not drink for like a day or two, and I knew I was going to drink again, you know. And and there was another time where I went up to visit her, and I told her I was going to go to a meeting with her, and I called to cancel, and she said, if you're not waiting for me outside at 6 o'clock, I will come in and I will drag you out. And and that scared me a little bit. So I was out there, you know, waiting for her, and I was so sick. I've never been so sick in my entire life. Literally green in the face. And I spent most of the meeting in the bathroom throwing up, and afterwards she introduced me to all of her friends as a drunk little sister. So that was pretty embarrassing. You know, and it was funny. I just remember the look in their eyes, the look on their faces, just like pity, and like, I know how you feel, I've been there. But I couldn't, it wasn't enough for me, I couldn't see that, you know. All I could see was my sister embarrassing the crap out of me, you know. And and I went home, and you know, I ended up breaking up with that boyfriend. He was a drug dealer, my main supply, and you know, I was sure that it was him, so I broke up with him. And I got a different boyfriend, a better boyfriend, who was a raging alcoholic, had been in rehab, you know, a couple times, you know, at the age of 15, had a year sober, relapsed, all this fun stuff. And, you know, of course he was not on the wagon when I started dating him, but, you know, I was just looking for something to make me feel better, you know, because it was, you know, it was not the alcohol, it was my family, it was my mom, it was my sister, it was my dad, it was the fact that I failed out of college again, it was the fact that I'm, you know, from a broken home, you know, whatever, it was anything other than my alcohol and the way I was drinking. And, I mean, it just got to a point where I literally felt like I was going insane. I remember just crying, just not knowing what was wrong with me, not knowing how to fix it, just really thinking I belonged in a mental institution, and just absolutely insane. And I went to the intergroup down in Virginia Beach, and I got a meeting list. And I remember sitting outside of a 6 o'clock meeting in Virginia Beach and just watching everybody go into that meeting and thinking, am I really going to do this? Am I really, you know, is this really what's going to happen? And I walked into that meeting, and I went straight for the coffee pot, and there was a greeter there at the coffee pot, and he introduced himself, and he asked me my name, and he said, welcome. And I'm pretty sure he still has not forgotten my name. Like, he is the best greeter I've ever met. I mean, he knows everybody, and I think that the greeter is a very important service position to have in a home group because of that experience. You know, every time I came back to a meeting where he was at, I felt welcomed because he would always come up to me and say, hey, Jody, how you doing? You know, welcome to the meeting, blah, 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 what's going on? And it just made me feel like I was a part of it. You know, I walked into that room so afraid, you know, for sure they were going to turn me around and tell me to go to Al-Anon or Alateen or whatever, because they could see it on my face, that's not where I belonged. And I sat in that meeting, and you know, that it was a commuter meeting, so there were a lot of people who had jobs and families and lives outside of this. I mean, I had nothing at this point. And they were sharing about that, about losing that stuff, about losing families, wives, children, jobs, all that stuff. And I couldn't relate to that, you know. And I remember talking to a woman after the meeting, and you know, this woman was, she was very patient. She spent, I mean, hours with me just talking to me about the steps, about the traditions, about different kinds of meetings, really laid it all out for me. And I, you know, I shared this with her, you know, that I couldn't relate to what was being said in the meetings, and, you know, I haven't lost anything. And she said, well, Jody, you really don't have anything to lose, do you? And I thought, okay, all right. All right, I got it. Okay, I can go back. And she talked to me about identifying with the way they felt and how they thought, their thinking, rather than the stuff that they had or the stuff that they lost, because that's not what it was about for me. It's all about your thinking. I want to know how you think. You know, I want to know how you thought when you were drinking, how you thought when you stopped drinking, how you're thinking now. I want to know that kind of stuff. I want to know how you felt when you took your first drink, you know, what you were wearing, you know, what was your first drink, you know, all that stuff. And I started to feel like a part of AA, you know, like I was where I belonged. And, you know, they suggested that I get a home group, that I go to a service position, that I get a sponsor, that I start working the steps, and I did all that stuff. And I got about 9 months sober, I'd worked the steps to the best of my ability. I'd gotten up to, I think, to the amends part, and there was just something more. You know, I had started hanging out with a couple of guys in Virginia Beach, and they had several years sober, and they were talking about the big book, and they were talking about traditions, and you know, in the meetings that I went to, they didn't really talk about that stuff, you know, and they were, like, on fire for AA, you know. They were really enthusiastic about the program and about the big book and all of that. And so my friend Ryan had mentioned this young people's meeting in Norfolk. And so we went out there one night, and it was in this basement, and it was all dark, and they had Christmas lights up around the room, and it was like 10 or 12 young people in there, and I thought, wow, this is, I mean, I was really nervous at first because there weren't any young people where I'd gotten sober in Virginia Beach, but I felt like I fit in, you know, and I made that my home group, and it started out as a daily reflection meeting, and now it's a big book topic meeting, and the last Thursday of the month they have the tradition and the step, a speaker on each, and so it's a really, really good meeting, but it's been, it was really awesome to see it grow. You know, it went from like 3 home group members. Now there's like 12 home group members. They have annual like house cleaning group inventory meetings. You know, they're active in AA. That's the kind that, you know, that's the home group I came from. You know, we have a workshop every quarter. You know, we have an anniversary meeting. Our home group members are involved in other stuff, you know, in treatment and corrections and PI and CPC. And that, I mean, I just love that. I loved being in the center of AA, you know, and I absolutely believe that having a home group and being a member of a home group is so important. It absolutely was important to my sobriety because nobody knew me better than those home group members. You know, nobody knew, you know, when I would say, oh, I'm fine, they knew, you're not really fine. What's going on? You know, let's get honest here. And, you know, I knew which home group members to go to if I wanted the fluff, and I knew which home group members to go to when I wanted the truth. And, you know, sometimes they would tell me the truth without my asking for it, you know. That really got on my nerves. But, you know, so I joined this home group, and I got active in AA, and, you know, and I had the sponsor that had taken me as far as she could. You know, we didn't work the steps out of the big book, but we worked the steps, and I, you know, I felt something. I felt different. You know, I felt a change. And I had gone to this workshop in Portsmouth, and it was on self-centered fear. One of the topics was self-centered fear. And a woman was there sharing about self-centered fear, and I could really relate to what she was saying because at that point in my sobriety, I knew something needed to change, but I didn't know how to do it. And I was so immobilized with fear, I was just not doing anything, you know. I couldn't do anything. I didn't know what step to take. And after the meeting, my friend Ryan said, come on, I'm going to introduce you to your new sponsor. And I'm glad that he did that because it kind of broke the ice for me. I mean, I wasn't going to talk to her. I really liked what she shared, but, you know, she's obviously too busy for me. I'm not going to go thank her, whatever. And so we got to talking after the meeting, and we went out to dinner, and I ended up working with her, and she took me through the book, and we started in the beginning, and she was out of town, so we met over the phone, but it was, her enthusiasm definitely was transferred through the phone line, because she was really excited about the big book. She was really, really into it, really into staying active in the program and going to as many meetings anywhere, anytime, and that started happening for me, too, you know. It was just really cool to go through the big book, get some history on it, talk about, you know, I could say I was an alcoholic, but I didn't really know what that meant, you know. I had a general sense of the word, of what it meant and all that, but going through the book, I really got a better idea of my drinking, and we talked about the mental obsession and the physical craving, and, you know, for a long time, I thought I couldn't relate to the physical craving or really the mental obsession. You know, I just like to drink. You know, I didn't know what that means for me, you know, what my liking to drink means, you know, and that it does come out to the mental obsession and the physical craving. You know, all those times I woke up and said, I'm not going to drink anymore, I can't do it, I'm done. You know, it's just, it's killing me. I know, I can feel it, it's killing me. And by 3 or 4 o'clock, I was in the shower getting ready to go out again, you know, because I had just changed my mind. You know, that's not... There's no, I'm not an alcoholic, you know, I'm allowed to change my mind, and that's what I really thought it was, you know, that I just made a decision, and, you know, the physical craving, I don't know how many times I started out the night just saying, I'm going to drink one, that's all I'm going to have, I've got a big day tomorrow, and, you know, by 3 o'clock, I'm trying to figure out how I can get more, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm trying to figure out how I can get more alcohol, because I'm not drunk enough. And just that oblivion that I was really looking for. That's what I wanted. That was my ultimate goal in drinking. I needed to feel nothing. And, you know, in steps 2 and 3, you know, that whole, well, you didn't really have anything to lose, that kind of thing kind of came into play there. And, you know, God... I remember talking a lot about God when I was wasted, you know, talking with my friends about it and how, you know, how he plays into everything and what do you think about God and, you know, really having no idea whatsoever, having no relationship with God, except for the, like, please, God, don't let me die drunk on the floor, you know, vomiting in my mom's bathroom, you know, I don't want to do this, But, you know, what my sponsor, my first sponsor told me was just get on your knees in the morning and at night. That's all you have to do to start out, you know, and just talk to God like you're talking to me. And that's how I started out. You know, I thought that I had to have some drawn out long prayer, meditation, candles burning, blah, 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 you know, to have a prayer life or a relationship with God. And that wasn't the case for me. I just started doing those simple things and something changed. I don't know when it changed or why it changed or how it changed, really. I just did what I was told, you know. And that's been my experience. You know, if I do what I'm told, something happens. You know, if I do, you know, my sponsor shares her experience with me, my sponsor now, and that's, I learned from her. You know, I learned from her, from watching her do what, you know, do what the program says, you know, to do the principles in the program and all of that. But, you know, I mean, I just expected with the third step to feel something completely different, you know, to feel this white light explosion and just be rendered white as snow, you know. And that's not how it happened. You know, it was definitely the whole God thing was a gradual thing for me. It wasn't a right away change. The fourth step, that is where I think I felt, where I really felt something different, you know. The first four step I did was when I had about 6 months sober, so, you know, there wasn't a whole lot that I remembered. I mean, what I'm seeing now is the longer I stay sober, the more I remember, and it's kind of freaky, because, like, I was talking about those memories that I had, like, I mean, literally, I think it was yesterday morning, I just remembered something that I had done, and just kind of shuddered at the thought of, you know, my behavior in the past. And the funny thing is that I, it's been in the back of my mind that I probably need to make amends to some of my girlfriend's mothers because of the way that I treated them, the way that I, treated their property or, all of that, you know, and I'm thinking like, no, I don't really, you know, I made amends to my mom. I don't need to make amends to them. And then that, this memory came up that just, wow. You know, and just the double standards that I hold, you know, it's okay for me to do that kind of stuff, but if you did that kind of stuff to me or to my mother, we're through, you know? And it's just amazing to me. But so the fourth step is was a really eye-opening experience. The next one I did was at about a year and a half sober, and it was just, you know, I just had a relationship end, and it was just bad. It was just really bad, and my character defects were really there, really present, really very visible to me, you know. And I got all of that down on paper and with the direction of a sponsor, and I read that to her. And I thought for sure, maybe I thought she was going to fire me. Maybe I thought she was going to be so disgusted with my behavior, but she wasn't. She was kind of like, I've done those things too, you know, and here's what I've done in sobriety. And I love that. I love hearing about what my sponsor is still doing in sobriety, you know, because I need to know that too. I need to know that you're still crazy, you know, but I also want to see how you've worked the steps to get rid of that craziness, you know. And so I did that fourth and fifth step, and six and seven, you know, for a long time, I really did not realize how important they really are, you know, and my experience with six and seven that first time was I didn't do six and seven, and welcome to Crazy Town USA, you know, because that's where I ended up. You know, I ended up crying, you know, calling my sponsor, calling my friend, saying, I don't know what's wrong with me, something, this isn't working, you know, blah, 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 and I hadn't done six and seven. You know, I hadn't asked God to take away these character defects that I found, you know, objectionable. And so I did that. And now with inventories six and seven, you know, I really try to take time and, you know, do what the book says, follow the directions in the book. And I have some really neat experiences with seven. With eight and nine, I got the list for eight from my inventory, and step nine, like, I'm so happy that I had the direction of a sponsor, strong direction from a sponsor. I mean, she basically said, this is what you're going to do. and there's no really way around it, you know. And I needed that kind of direction, because if she just thrown me out there with my list of amends to do whatever I wanted, I would have really screwed something up, you know. And I definitely did. I mean, early in sobriety, before I'd gotten to the ninth step, I decided to call some of my drinking buddies and make amends to them. Really, I just wanted to tell them, you know, that I was sober and that, you know, this is a really cool way of life and you guys should come too. And, you know, I did a lot of that pointing the finger when I was drinking. And, you know, when I was going to those meetings when I was 15 or 16 years old, I would go back to the keg party and, you know, hold my girlfriend's hair while she was puking and tell her, I think you're an alcoholic. You should probably go to AA meetings with me. You know, and I'm still, you know, sipping on my drink, you know, haven't finished yet. But I'm not as bad as her because I'm not throwing up, you know. I'm not getting arrested. I'm not ending up in the hospital. And, so, yeah, 8 and 9. Step 9, the direction it was really important for me and still is really important for me. So, you know, when I did my first amends, I mean, I started with my family. I figured they would be the easiest ones. And most of them were pretty easy. I remember talking to my niece, and I think at the time, let's see, I've got 6 years. At the time, she was 11 when I got sober. And so when I made my amends to her, you know, I thought I was just going to be like, all right, this is what I did. Sorry. I'll try and be a better aunt. And I asked her, you know, is there anything that I've done that I'm not aware of, or is there anything that you want to say that you think I need to hear? And she said, I just want you to know that you really hurt me. And that really shocked me, you know, because, I mean, still at that point, I still didn't think that my behavior had affected anybody, you know. And she is a totally different story, but, you know, she's 17 now, and she is practicing. She is practicing becoming an alcoholic, you know, and it sucks. It sucks so bad. I hate it. I hate being powerless, you know. I hate that. I hate listening to her tell me those stories about what she's doing and who she's doing it with and, you know, what kind of fun she's having. And all I can do is share my experience if she asks, you know, and she doesn't ask. And it's just really difficult for me. And, you know, probably the most difficult amend I had to make was with my dad. I mean, I remember I got 30 days sober and I sent him a card and told him I was sober. And he wrote back and said, I'm glad you're off the pot. It can be a really bad thing for your brain. And he didn't mention a word about alcohol. And, you know, when it came time to make amends, I left him several messages, tried to call him, and I got no response. He didn't answer my call. He didn't return it. And so, you know, I went to my sponsor with that, and I said, well, what do I do with this? And she said, well, why don't you start writing him a letter, you know, once or twice a month and just see how that goes. And so I would do that. I did that once or twice a month, just letting him know what was going on in my life. You know, not talking about AA or how sober I was or what step I was on or anything like that, but just, you know, what's going on with work, what's going on with my family, you know, with my sister, with my mom, and ask him about him, and that was all I did, you know. And I did that for, I think about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and I started getting, like, I got a Valentine's Day card 1 year, and I got a birthday card 1 year, and then, you know, I got a birthday call, and, you know, but he left a message, you know, while I was at work, and I tried to call him back, and he didn't answer, and he never called me back. So it was just kind of back and forth for a while, and I called him 1 year on his birthday, just expecting to get his voicemail, and I started leaving a message, and his girlfriend picked up and said, hold on, I'm going to go get him, and she went and got him, and we talked for about 10 minutes, and he was kind of like, I haven't seen you in a while. You know, where you been? And I'm like, well, if you'd return my calls, maybe we could set something up. No, I didn't say that. But, you know, I just said, well, I can come visit, you know, next month or whatever. And he said, all right, that sounds good. You know, I'll get a plan all set up and I'll see you then. And, And, you know, now I call to check in, and he answers the phone, so that's really cool. You know, and if he doesn't answer the phone, he'll call me back. And I called to check in, and I went to go visit him, had all these plans to make amends to him, and I got another resentment and couldn't make amends to him. And so I had to go back 6 months later, and after doing inventory, talking to my sponsor, praying, you know, all that stuff that we're taught to do, and I made those amends. And you know, he's not much of a talker, and so it was really uncomfortable for him to do that. I got him in the car, so there was no escaping, and I just said, you know, I've been a really selfish and inconsiderate daughter, and you know, I'm really sorry about that, and I want to make it different. I want to be different. I want to have a relationship. You know, what can I do to make this right? And he mumbled something about our family being real screwed up, and that he just wanted to see me more often, you know. And when I do get to see him, he wants to take me out to do things. Like, he loves to go hiking and biking and fishing and all that kind of stuff. So he wants me to do stuff with him. Is that too much to ask? I mean, you know, certainly when I was drinking, it was definitely too much to ask. You know, I could not handle that. If there was not drinking involved, I wasn't there. You know, for a long time, that's how I was. And, you know, and today, I just went to visit him, and I brought my sister and my niece, my youngest niece. And he had never met my youngest niece, and he hasn't seen my sister in, I think, 7 or 8 years. And so she went to make amends to him. And it was just a really cool experience, you know. I am so blessed to be able to be present in my family's lives, you know. My sister, you know, 7 years ago, my sister wouldn't have asked me to take her to West Virginia to make amends to our father, you know. And my relationship with my sister has been really difficult. You know, she's been in and out of AA, and when I got about 1.5 years sober, she relapsed, and you know, and it was hell. It was hell because she would call me drunk and say things like, "Maybe my purpose in life is done," you know, and just really hurtful, crazy stuff, you know, that we alcoholics say when we're drunk. But you know, it drove me crazy, and it was a really difficult time, and I really don't know how I did that. You know, I had a lot of direction from sponsors and a lot of experience with that stuff, and it's just been a real struggle. And you know, we've gone back and forth, and recently, I mean, she's got about 1.5 years now, and that's absolutely amazing. For me to say that she's actually sober, like, she's sober, she's worked the steps, she's making amends, she's sponsoring people. Like, all of this stuff that I've, you know, been able to do in sobriety like that, you know, make amends and sponsor women, God, I wanted her to know that feeling. You know, I wanted her to feel that way. And she does now. And that's a really cool experience to just be a part of that, you know, to be there, to witness it, you know, and to be present. And, you know, so, I mean, a lot of the amends I'm still making with my family, you know, just being there, being present, being, you know, just saying yes to my family. And it's been awesome. It's been an absolutely awesome experience to be able to do that. And I never would have thought, you know, that would be something important to me, you know, something that I would value. And, you know, 10, 11, and 12, I am not perfect. I am so not perfect. Lately I've been feeling really not sober. So, you know, and I don't know what that is. I think I'm not as active as I was in AA down in Virginia Beach. You know, I don't do as much here that I did down there, and I think that plays a big part in it. And you know, I just when I remember, I try to do steps 10 and 11. You know, the morning and the night stuff. You know, review my day at night and do inventory if I need to. And in the morning, I'll do the readings in the morning, and say a prayer and kind of look at my day and what I want to get done and realize that it's okay, you know, if that stuff doesn't happen. But, you know, and step 12 is, has saved my butt on so many occasions. Working with other women, I mean, I remember my sponsor telling me, you know, you're going to be helping me more than I will ever help you. And I thought, you're lying, you know. You have a solution to my problem. You know, you have a way out. And when I started sponsoring women, I realized that she was not lying. She was, in fact, telling the truth. And, you know, I don't know how many times, you know, going through inventory with one of my sponsees and you know, seeing her aha moment and feeling like, oh my God, I'm the same way. You know, that's awesome. That is awesome that, you know, I can listen to somebody else's inventory and see myself and say, maybe I need to do some writing about that. You know, I've never written about that. I've never thought about that. I've never seen that before. And it's just been an absolutely amazing experience for me. And, you know, the practicing the principles in all of our affairs, I'm not perfect at it. I mean, I'm really good at throwing temper tantrums. I'm the youngest child, and I will show you, you know. I will show you how petty I can be, how much of a baby I can be. And, I still play that card a lot, you know. I think that I'm younger than I really am, and I'm an adult, you know. I pay bills, I have a house, I've got, you know, student loans, I've got, you know, whatever. I am an adult, and I need to act that way. But, you know, the practicing the principles in all our affairs, probably the hardest place to do that is at home with my family or with my relationship. And, I'm not perfect, but I'm sorry really helps a lot, you know. It goes a long way, or at least to say I realize that I am behaving badly and I want to change and I don't know how to do that, you know. Just recognizing that. And I've had a lot of opportunities to do service work, and that's another big thing for me is being of service. And I talked about my home group being really active in AA down in Virginia Beach and Norfolk area. And I had the opportunity of getting involved in a young people's conference in Virginia Beach. And it was the Virginia State Conference of Young People in AA. We made a bid to have it in Virginia Beach, and we held it in June of 2006. And, I mean, I was really excited at first when we first got the bid and we first set everything up and everything. That soon changed when I realized how much work was involved in that. And, you know, we would spend hours in business meetings, and there would be curses and, you know, let's take this outside and bottles being thrown. And, you know, and then we would leave the meeting and we would go have a barbecue at somebody's house or play a game of volleyball, you know, no big deal. And, I mean, we were really like a family. I mean, we would have those fights, we would talk things out, and then everything would be okay. I mean, it amazes me how AA has taught me everything I need to know about living life, you know, whether it's, you know, how to be a family member or how to pay my bills. And it's not like my sponsor sat me down and said, okay, this is how you write out a check, you know. It wasn't like that. It's just that, you know, by being the alternate treasurer, I found out how to pay bills, how to keep a checkbook, you know. By seeing my, you know, sponsor pay off her debt, I've learned how to pay off my debt, you know. And it's just that easy. It's just amazing to me. But, you know, this conference was an awesome, awesome experience. I mean, I really had no idea how much work goes into a conference, you know. They're a lot of fun to attend, but I never really figured that out until I started getting involved in it. And I'm still on the advisory committee, and we don't do a whole lot as advisory, but I still get to attend all the young people's conferences and kind of be an ear to help them. And so that's been really cool. And, you know, about a year ago, I moved here from Norfolk, and I took a job, and I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. And, you know, I spent, you know, 5 years in Norfolk, and that was my home, you know, and so I came here, and it's like I'm a newcomer again, you know, it really is. And in talking with a bunch of people, I've got, you know, a ton of friends in the military, so they move, like, what, every 2 years? And so talking to some of them, they're, you know, getting their experience and stuff, they tell me that most of the time it takes a year at least to feel like you belong somewhere, to feel like you have a place. And so I'm just about a year now. And, you know, I still really don't feel like I belong here, you know, and it's it kind of sucks, you know, and I don't think that's anything that you guys are doing. I'm pretty sure it's everything I'm doing, you know, and at least I can do that, you know. I hear all the time, like, I moved to so-and-so, and they don't do it right there, and that's, you know, that was my attitude at first, you know. They don't do it right there. They don't even say the prayer right, you know, and that's not the case, you know. I forget that it's what I can bring to an AA meeting, not what I'm getting from the AA meeting, and, you know, I have that home group, and I'm getting involved there, and I'm trying to get involved in other avenues in AA around here, and try to get active. And it's been really difficult, and I miss my family a lot. That's probably the biggest thing. I really miss my family, and not just, you know, my mom and my sister, but my AA family there too. It's like life goes on, you know, and it's cool. It's really cool to see that my home group can survive without me, because I really didn't think it would. No. But it's really cool to just see that. And, you know, my sister's a member of that home group now, and so I get reports on that, on how everything's going. And you know, like I said, they've got 12 home group members. Newcomers are coming in left and right and staying, you know, and that's really amazing to me. I remember the first time a teenager came into the meeting, and she was 17, and she's got, I think, 2 years now, and it was just awesome for me to see that, to see, God, I mean, at 17, I couldn't even imagine getting sober at 17, you know, going to your high school prom and not being able to get drunk, you know, and then going on to college and seeing her do that and seeing her be active in college but continue to stay sober, you know, that's just absolutely amazing to me. And these things I couldn't have seen if I wasn't involved in AA, you know, if I didn't get involved in my home group, if I didn't, you know, stay 20 minutes after the meeting or come 20 minutes early, you know, that's how I had been taught, you know, you show up early, you stay late, and I would not have been able to be a part of that, you know, if I had left right after the meeting. And just real quick, you know, I have a lot of friends that with different lengths of sobriety, and talking to them, it's just funny to see how we all go through different phases at different times in our sobriety. Like a year and a half, 2 years, I was trying to save the entire world, including all of my old drinking buddies. You know, and then like definitely at 2 years, I was like, I know everything and I'm good. You know, I don't need any suggestions from you. And then at 5 years, I got crazy, like really crazy. And just, you know, I had no idea what was wrong. What's wrong? I don't understand. Why? Maybe I need to do more inventory, blah, 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 blah. You know, just trying to figure out a way to fix myself, because I don't want to feel this way. And I had done this inventory with my sponsor, and it was on this old roommate that I had, and she just really wronged me. And my sponsor said, you're probably going to have to make amends to her. And I said, no way. And she said, then you better get ready to drink, because that's going to happen if you don't make amends to this girl. And when she put it to me that way, it kind of sounded like maybe I should make amends to her. And I started praying for the willingness, because I wasn't willing at that point. And, you know, I think what happened was, I mean, I sat on those amends for so long that it seeped out into every area of my life, you know, work, AA, my friends, my family. I mean, it got to the point where I just hated everyone, and I did not want to be a part of this AA thing. I did not want to be a part of this home group, and, you know, I don't like you. So, when I finally was able to make amends to that girl, I mean, it was just, I mean, I went in there with an open heart. You know, of course, I prayed before I went in, and something changed. I mean, as soon as I sat down at the table to make amends to her, something changed. And and we became friends again. You know, I mean, that was the last thing I wanted when I did that inventory. I told my sponsor, I said, what if she asked me to be friends with her again? I can't do that. I hate her. I hate her. And she said, well, that's going to be something that you have to be willing to do. And lo and behold, that's what she asked of me. She wanted to be friends with me. And she also needed help painting her house, so I went and did that, helped her out with that. And I remember thinking, like, oh, this is so stupid. Why do I have to help her paint her house? I mean, can't she get somebody else to help her with this? And, I mean, we just had a blast. You know, we ended up having a blast, and it was a lot of fun. And I mean, you know, she's somebody now I can call in the middle of the day and just cry to, or vent, or yell, or scream, or say, I think I might owe this person amends. You know, what can I do? And she's there. And that, you know, that wouldn't have happened if I wasn't willing eventually to do something different. And, you know, that's the thing that I love about sobriety. I know if I stick around here long enough, if I just keep showing up, if I keep doing what I'm supposed to do, something's going to change, you know. I will feel different eventually, you know. And it's just, I want to feel different now. I want to feel better now. I want to feel good now, you know. I want to feel good again. But it's something that takes time. And I know that it takes time and effort and work and willingness. And, you know, I have all of those things. I'm willing to do something different. I'm willing to change. I want to do something different. But it's just taking the action, putting one foot in front of the other. And that, the biggest thing I think I learned from that time at 5 years, I mean, after that point, I was an open book. I mean, I just opened up to everybody. I was just like, you know, screw it. You know, all of these walls I've been holding up, all of this, you know, basically lies I've been telling you. You know, I'm done. It's time to tell the truth, you know. And I became a part of life at last, you know. The creating the fellowship we crave, that's, I love that part in the book that it talks about that and a vision for you. I love that. I mean, that's what I want. That's what I want here, you know, and I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to do that, to create the fellowship I crave. And so I think that's about all that I have today, and thank you so much for asking me.